Good afternoon, everyone. It's a real pleasure to be here again, and really want to recognize the Wilson Center not only for hosting this event but for the recognition in the U.S. and globally. Transdisciplinary work, I think, is so much at the center of so many of the issues that we're grappling with. I couldn't refrain from doing a little bit of a plug. The World Resources Institute was also ranked as the leading, the number one environmental think tank in the world. And so we're delighted to be here. What I wanted to do today, just very briefly, is share three things, a little bit on the substance of this agenda called the Sustainable Development Goals, and in particular, how it differs from the Millennium Development Goals. I want to talk a little bit about the process in terms of how the United Nations, the international community, has gotten to where we are today and what lies ahead over the next 9 months. And then I want to talk briefly about four or five issues that I believe, that we believe, are pretty critical in terms of realizing what the aspirations underpinning these goals actually would be. So I'm going to assume a basic kind of, you know, understanding of the Millennium Development Goals and the Sustainable Development Goals, but I think perhaps the thing that is most gripping about the Sustainable Development Goals is their desire to be much more transformative in terms of what they mean for the planet. And so perhaps that is nowhere more fully captured than at the heart of the goals is a desire to eradicate extreme poverty in the next 15 years by 2030, to eradicate all forms of poverty everywhere. And this is a theme that has remained at the heart of all of the conversations around the Sustainable Development Goals. And there it is kind of the inspiration of what I think many people feel can really mobilize a lot of public attention to what the potential might be, that we have it in our ability in the next 15 years to actually see a world that is truly free of poverty. Now I don't want to oversimplify this. This is, you know, typically poverty is seen as income poverty. We know it's much more complicated than that. There is a lot of complexity to how to actually achieve this. But as a central story for the Sustainable Development Goals, at the center, eradicating extreme poverty is one, perhaps the most exciting one. But we do know it will be complicated. This is a nice little piece from Development Initiatives. And it shows that whereas the last 15 years, the rapid reduction in income poverty was in no small part attributed through strong, robust economic growth in countries like China, India, and elsewhere, we know that poverty over the next 15 years is going to be a little bit more intractable. It's a little bit more difficult to actually. And what this little diagram does is it shows where poverty is located. And it situates it between countries that are considered politically fragile, countries that are seen as environmentally vulnerable, or both. And that little green circle on the left of 47 million people in extreme poverty are in countries that are neither politically fragile or environmentally vulnerable. So the point being that as we look at eradicating extreme poverty moving forward, we're working in much more difficult political and environmental contexts than may have been the case in the next 15 years. But at the heart of the SDGs is this concept of a more transformative change in development. The second point I want to make about how do the SDGs differ from the MDGs is that they're much more comprehensive in scope than what the MDGs were. So on the left, you have the 8 Millennium Development Goals, and they were largely not exclusively, but strongly and quite rightfully focused on social sector issues, a lot on health, a lot on education, eliminating hunger. What you have now, the proposal that has been put forward by the main intergovernmental body, the Open Working Group for the SDGs, has been 17 goals. And what you see is a much greater balance of goals that are focused on the economic dimensions of development, the environmental dimensions of development. You may recall it was MDG 7, which was around ensuring environmental sustainability, largely an afterthought, actually, when the Millennium Development Goals were crafted about 15, 16 years ago. Now, there are no shortage of goals that speak to different dimensions of sustainability, whether it is around natural resources, whether it is around climate change, whether it's around food, energy, water, that sustainability now has both a set of specific goals associated with it, as well as it's integrated into many other goals. And I'm going to come to that in a sec. But you see this pretty significant shift in the scope to one that focuses not only now on some of the social sectors, but also that focuses on the economic and the environmental dimensions in a much more serious way. The third point that I wanted, and this is a complicated graph, but what one of the other critiques of the Millennium Development Goals was that it reinforced a silo approach to development. So you had your goal on X, you had your goal on Y, and there was very little connection between the different goals. What there was a much greater effort in the design of the Sustainable Development Goals to identify targets or pieces of these goals that spoke to each other. So what you see here in this fairly complicated mosaic are the 17 goals, and what you see in the colors is the goals that speak to, the targets that speak to whether they're environmental, economic, or social in nature. And so what this kind of little color kind of mosaic demonstrates is that you look at any of the goals, and I know it's hard to read, but if you take energy or water, you see that the targets under that goal actually speak to social dimensions of development, environmental dimensions of development, economic dimensions of development, much, much more explicitly than was the case in the Millennium Development Goals. So there's a much more concerted effort to develop a much more integrated approach to how these goals and targets actually play out. Doesn't mean there can't be quite a bit more improvement, but there was a strong effort to try to make that happen. And I'd say the fourth thing, so more transformative, more comprehensive, more integrated. And the fourth characteristic of the Sustainable Development Goals that I think is worth mentioning is that they're, and perhaps the thing that is most profound is this idea of universality. Whereas the Millennium Development Goals were largely about how the rich world can pay for things to improve the condition in the developing world, there has been a real seismic shift in moving towards an agenda that would speak to all countries. And so this is a little schematic that we came up with, where if you look at the left, the Millennium Development Goals were basically actions that the developing countries would take that would be paid for, supported by the developed world, largely through aid. From there, we are moving towards a recognition that we want an agenda that is universal, so that not only speaks to poverty or deprivation in the developing world, but poverty or deprivation around all countries. So that's that second box about this concept of leaving no one behind. But beyond that, it's also another concept that's been embedded into this called kind of policy coherence for development. And what this concept is trying to say is that it also matters what policies one country has that may support or undercut efforts of another country to tackle poverty. So for example, it's not just aid that the rich world may give. If they have trade policy that in some way hinders the ability of agricultural development in certain countries, that is a problem. So that we need to look at an agenda that actually gets greater coherence in trade policy, in support for R&D, in migration policy, in financial system stability, all of these things that could have a spillover effect that could undercut development efforts in other countries. So that coherence in policies is a part of this agenda. And finally, it's also about collective action, recognizing that the world now is facing not just issues that pertain to specific countries. There are bigger problems, take climate change, which is a collective action problem that there needs to be mobilized a global response. So when we talk about a universal agenda, which is what this agenda aspires to achieve, it is a quite a rich mix of different things that have been included that actually make it very exciting if it can be realized. So those are just kind of transformative, comprehensive, integrated, universal, kind of four dimensions I would just mention around how the SDGs aspire to be different from the MDGs. I just want to say a couple of words about process. So if you thought that was complicated, this is just the simplified version of the process of how we've gotten to where we are. This is a little diagram from the UN Foundation. And as many of you know, the SDGs were born out of Rio plus 20. There's been no shortage of intergovernmental committees, technical high-level committees, public conversations around this. Probably useful to point out just a few of the big pieces or ingredients or inputs into kind of where we are today. There is a high-level panel that was co-chaired by the heads of state of Liberia, Indonesia, and the United Kingdom that came out with a report, the high-level panel report in June of 2013. Came out in 2013. There was an open working group, a formal intergovernmental process that came out of Rio plus 20, but that really came to life in 2014, where the 17 goals and the 169 targets came to life. There was a Secretary General synthesis report that came out just a few months ago in the fall that tried to bring all of these efforts together. There's been a lot of effort around public consultations. So you had this, My World Survey, anyone hear of this or take it? My World Survey, a couple of people. So the United Nations also kind of had this fantastic thing. Let's ask the public what they see as the most important priorities. And so they mobilized this massive survey. Over 7 million people have taken it about trying to identify what the real priorities were according to the people themselves. So lots and lots of conversations that have taken place. We're now at a critical point where in the next 6-9 months, we have the Financing for Development Conference in Addis Ababa taking place in July. We have the SDG, the post 2015 summit, that'll be taking place in November, in September in New York. And we have the Paris Climate Summit that will be taking place in December. So you have in this very short 6 months, 8 month span, this once in a generation moment where all these three incredibly important summits are going to be coming and taking place together. For the SDGs, for the post-2015 agenda, there will be a declaration and a goal framework that emerges in September at the Heads of State Summit. And that declaration and framework is going to consist of four different pieces. There's going to be a vision or a narrative around what what is the story? What is the aspiration? What is the words that will inspire and move the world to embrace a sustainable development goal framework? So that's kind of the first piece we will see come out of September. The second piece will be the goals and targets. Right now, the proposal is 17 goals, 169 targets that came out of the open working group process, and I'm going to come to that in a moment, but that is the current proposal that's on the table, and there's a lot of discussion around that. The third piece that'll come out of the declaration and the goal framework are kind of elements related to finance and means of implementation. So the point being that if the world is going to aspire to achieve these goals and targets, some countries are going to need support. They're going to need support in terms of money, but they're also going to need support in terms of other things such as technology, favorable trade policy, and so forth. And that's going to be a third piece of this equation. And finally, what is going to be quite important is how do we ensure accountability, right? So the monitoring and accountability infrastructure that's going to guide and support this is going to be the fourth major piece of what's going to come out in September. And that accountability is quite important because these are voluntary goals, right? So how are we going to get people to actually take them seriously? How are we going to have the type of peer pressure or support that gets people, keeps people focused on actually realizing this? So those are kind of the pieces around that. Now, I just want to kind of mention five kind of questions that I think people are grappling with as we move towards September. The first issue, and it gets to the title of this particular seminar, is we have 17 goals, we have 169 targets, right? Does that resonate? Does that work? There is one school of thought, this is overstylized, but one school of thought that says you can't communicate this. How are you going to go to a head of state and inspire them about what this agenda is if you have 17 goals? Jeff Sachs, you know, very iconically says, if you can't fit it on the back of my business card, it's too long. So at one level, there's a question about communication and focus. Is there focus if there's 169 targets? The other school of thought is saying, look, this has been a politically very difficult process. You have intergovernmental buy-in into these 17 goals and these 169 targets. They may not be technically perfect, but you have real ownership around them, at least amongst the majority of the countries that participated in this process. Don't mess with that. So there's a real debate here about, okay, can we do something on the margins that sharpen the communication, that improve the quality of some of the targets? Or if we do that, will we open up a Pandora's box and everything else will have to be completely renegotiated? So that's one of the big questions, is around the goals and targets, and do we take what we have with some small incremental change, or do we do something more significant but take the risk of opening up the entire political process? A second question is really going to be around finance and the means of implementation. So, many countries will say it's fine to have these goals and targets, but we need the support to actually achieve them. And in the past, promises made have not been promises kept, right? You think about the 0.7% commitment that the developed world has made for overseas development assistance for many, many years, but far from actually achieving that. So the conference that will take place in Addis in July is crucially important. And the question there is not only what is the role or model for ODA for the next 15 years in a world where development has changed quite a bit, but also can we begin to talk more seriously about recognizing that ODA is a very small percent of what development finance encompasses in many countries. Can we also talk about domestic resources, the resources that governments raise and spend in a much more thoughtful way? Can we talk about how to actually mobilize and direct private finance to things that matter for development? So there's a whole set of questions, both about how to make ODA smarter, more targeted for the challenges that we face today, but also how to have a conversation that goes beyond ODA to look at domestic resources, to look at private finance. A third issue that I think is actually quite important is climate change. We have the Paris summit coming up in December, an increasing recognition, right? Climate and development inextricably linked. You can't really solve and eradicate extreme poverty if we have 4 degrees of warming. And so there's a recognition that you really needed to bring climate into the Sustainable Development Goal agenda. This was originally resisted because people felt, let's have the climate conversation in the climate negotiations. Don't mess up the sustainable development negotiations. We've been able to overcome that, and I think we actually have a reasonably robust integration of the climate agenda into the various kind of goals, targets, and the narrative of the sustainable development agenda. But there's still some thorny questions about how you really bring these two agendas in a more coherent way together. And that is still to be sorted out. The fourth question is about universality. So I think this is probably the biggest question on my mind, which is, this is a voluntary normative framework, right? It is only going to work if people truly, truly embrace it and integrate it into what they do. So what is in this agenda for the large emerging middle-income countries, the Chinas and Indias? Is there a serious domestic conversation about what this agenda means to those countries? Is there a serious conversation about what this agenda means in the United States or in the rich world? What about non-state actors? Is the private sector, which is actually going to play an important role as to whether or not these goals and targets can be achieved, are they adequately engaged? So this question about how do you make sure that there is that this agenda speaks to the range of different countries, that they see some self-interest in engaging seriously in this agenda, as well as non-state actors, the private sector, cities, civil society more broadly, how do you get that to happen is a really, really important question. And my fifth and final kind of point is that at the end of the day, I actually think getting to September and getting a decent set of goals and targets is the easy part. What's going to be hard is what happens the day after, right? The implementation. How do you actually get this integrated into how national governments, state governments, the private sector build policy, make decisions? You all know the business school literature. 60 to 90% of corporations fail, not because they have the wrong strategy, they just didn't execute well. The same thing applies here. How do we get real execution? And so there's a lot of effort now to try to get a set of leadership countries that are really integrating this. So you have countries like Switzerland, Colombia, Costa Rica, Sweden, Rwanda, a set of countries that are starting to demonstrate what will it actually look like to integrate this agenda into their own national planning processes. We need to see more of that. We need to support that, because at the end of the day, it's the actual practice that will mobilize and inspire others. So with that, I mean, my kind of sense is that I'm surprised that the process has gotten as far as it has in terms of what we have. There is no doubt it can be much better. But for a process that is a political process, that is going to be shared by a lot of people, it is a very different creature than the MDGs. This is not a set of focused issues where ODA should be targeted. This is about a vision for what a future world should look like. And in that context, it isn't a bad start. A lot more work needs to be done between now and September, but the real challenge will be what happens after September. So thank you very much.